Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
10 to 6 the time on a balmy Friday evening in September. Tom Swarbrick here on LBC, which means, ladies and gentlemen, one thing. It's Simon Marks, American Week.
Tom, it has been a week of such moment here and there that I can pretty much guarantee we're not going to squeeze everything in. So let's start by nodding to the fact that once again this week we learnt more about the enormous risks to public health in America. Now Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is in Donald Trump's cabinet. Once again, some entirely innocent people were caught up in the ICE deportation dragnet as the president's thuggish masked agents particularly focused on Chicago and Long Beach, California. In both places, people were dragged off the streets in what looked to onlookers like kidnappings. And, of course, freedom of speech came under fresh assault here. But while all that was going on, over in Windsor, the band played on. On Wednesday, shortly after their arrival at Windsor Castle, the Trumps were treated by the King and Queen to a beating the retreat ceremony. The President presented the King with a ceremonial Eisenhower sword. The King presented the President with a Union Jack. It had flown over Buckingham Palace on the day of his January inauguration. Apart from that rather curious symbolism, there was the traditional, impeccably timed flypast by the Red Arrows. And a host of other events to dazzle the first couple during their day and a half long trip and to minimise the risk of protests disrupting the state visit or of disagreements between the two governments overshadowing it.
It's really so good to have you here, so thank you so much. You are among friends.
The Prime Minister at Chequers yesterday, the two leaders unveiling a £250 billion investment package, fresh two-way trade between Britain and the US that he said would create at least 7,500 jobs in the UK's AI, quantum computing and nuclear sectors. In President Trump's comments, it became apparent that the Prime Minister had succeeded in wooing his host with the King's unprecedented invitation to make a second state visit to the UK.
The exquisite honor of a second official state visit, the first ever. It's always nice to have a first. But the ties between our countries are priceless, and it's really an inheritance. It's a beautiful inheritance. Today we're making those ties closer than ever before. We've done some things that financially are great for both countries. And we work together, and it keeps us together, and I think it's an unbreakable bond we have. Yeah.
But is it really? Listen, I know Downing Street is delighted it all passed off without incident, that the massive downside risk of the invitation didn't blow up in the Prime Minister's face, that questions about Jeffrey Epstein didn't overshadow the event. But when you listened to the two men yesterday at their joint press conference, it was pretty clear they were carefully papering over cracks in the bilateral relationship that could still bring the entire edifice crashing down. On immigration, for instance, a president engaged in the largest mass deportation operation in American history clearly doesn't think much of one in, one out, and proffered the Prime Minister his own expert advice.
I think your situation is very similar. You know, you have people coming in, and I told the Prime Minister I would stop it, and it doesn't matter if you call out the military, it doesn't matter what means you use, but it's going to destroy. It destroys countries from within.
Just a reminder, President Trump's falling out with Theresa May arose because she rejected his suggestion that she should sue the European Union rather than engage in Brexit negotiations with it. So when the president gives advice to the prime minister, it is not risk-free if the prime minister ignores it. On Gaza, no agreement there. The US will not be joining Britain, France, Australia and others in recognizing Palestinian statehood at the United Nations next week. As the president succinctly put it,
I have a disagreement with the prime minister on that score. Okay. One of our few disagreements, actually.
Except there's another one over Russia's war on Ukraine. Whoops of joy emanated from Downing Street when the president said this about Vladimir Putin.
He has let me down. I mean, he's killing many people and he's losing more people than he's killing. Yeah. I mean, frankly, the Russian soldiers are being killed at a higher rate than the Ukrainian soldiers. But he said, let me down.
But as ever, consequences for Putin do not appear to be on Donald Trump's immediate agenda. Indeed, yesterday, he even indicated he's not sure that America really has a dog in the fight.
It doesn't affect the United States. We have, other than unless you end up in a world war over this thing, you could. And he, look, it doesn't so much affect you. Of course, you are a lot closer to the scene than we are. We have a whole ocean separating us.
We have to put extra pressure on Putin. And it's only when the president has put pressure on Putin that he's actually shown any inclination to move. So we have to ramp that pressure up.
Good luck with that. While the president was in the UK, surrounded by members of his inner circle who have accused the prime minister of backsliding on free speech, here in the US, another canary was dying in the coal mine.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
The comedian Jimmy Kimmel on his late night talk show on Monday night, which turned out to be his penultimate appearance on ABC. By Wednesday, Trump was making his move against him. And by that night, he became just one of hundreds, possibly more than 1,000 people in America who have lost their jobs because of what they have said in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination last week. It is no longer only people who openly celebrate the conservative activist's murder who are paying the price. Attorney General Pam Bondi, the nation's chief law enforcement officer, with this instruction to American employers on Monday night, delivered over Fox News.
Employers, you have an obligation to get rid of people. You need to look at people who are saying horrible things, and they shouldn't be working with you.
Note the use of the phrase there, people who are saying horrible things. There's no legal definition of things that are horrible, certainly not one that would override blanket protections on free speech contained in the First Amendment to the Constitution that actually protect hate speech in the US as well. But just saying horrible things now, well, that's enough to get you cancelled. And it happened this week to airline pilots, teachers, nurses, doctors, university lecturers, lawyers, and yes, to Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel was fired because he had bad ratings more than anything else, and he said a horrible thing about a great gentleman known as Charlie Kirk. And Jimmy Kimmel is not a talented person. He had very bad ratings, and they should have fired him a long time ago. So, you can call that free speech or not. He was fired for lack of talent.
So that was the president's story while he was at Chequers, even though Mr. Kimmel never said anything remotely horrible or even hateful about Charlie Kirk himself. Rather, he was going after the president and his supporters. These days, that alone is a no-no. And by the time Air Force One was heading home, the president's threats to freedom of speech intensified, as he indicated that his war on America's big three broadcasters is only just revving up.
On network television, there is a license. I'll give you an example. I read someplace that the networks were 97% against me. They give me only bad publicity. They're getting a license. I would think maybe their license should be taken away.
And he is already demanding that NBC fire Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers, the last men standing in a comedic late-night TV tradition that stretches back over 65 years.
They can tell you what to say. They're telling you what to think. There is nothing they can't do to you.
Breaking with the president yesterday, Tucker Carlson, the former Fox News presenter and one of the most influential voices on the right, reflecting deep anxiety among some of the president's supporters about where this free speech crackdown is heading in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's murder.
You hope that a year from now, the turmoil we're seeing in the aftermath of his murder won't be leveraged to bring hate speech laws to this country. And trust me, if it is, there is never a more justified moment for civil disobedience than that, ever, and there never will be.
Quite a warning there for the president, and there are Republicans in Congress now urging the White House to row back as well. This week, the nation remembered a man who always spoke his mind, even when he wasn't delivering lines that were scripted for him. The actor, director, and environmentalist Robert Redford died on Tuesday at the age of 89. You cannot sum his career up in a few seconds. So many great great films. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, All the President's Men, Out of Africa, the list goes on and on. He was born in Santa Monica, had a relatively hard Scrabble existence as a child, and was deeply impacted by the death of his mother when he was in his late teens. But as a youngster, the craft of storytelling had an immediate appeal.
The most exciting things to hear when I was little was Once Upon a Time, because I grew up in a lower working class family. We didn't have much. My dad was a milkman, and we had to live on very little, but we had story, you know. So every night when I'd go to bed, because I was a restless kid, I was always wanting to climb out the window and go somewhere else. And so to settle me down, they'd tell me a story, and I couldn't wait.
He spoke there to American Masters on PBS. He didn't fancy Donald Trump at all, spoke of his outrage and despair over the president's actions to undermine democracy and the rule of law. But of course, Tom, he did star in The Sting. So he was professionally trained to play a grifter and perhaps to spot one as well.
From Washington, D.C., Simon Marks, American Week.